So hello everybody, it's another Bangers and Classics podcast with me, James Rupper, and him, David Malloy. And what's been going on, David, at your end of things?
Not a vast amount, no? James. No, no, really, really not a vast amount. I haven't seen any interesting cars this week that I can recall. No, not a one. One bit of news. Mm-hmm. We've got the Jeep back, finally.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it actually seems to be running okay now, touch wood. So that's one thing, I suppose, yeah. that's positive. But that's about it. All I can say about seeing cars this week. What about you?
Oh, loads going on here, David. I've had a very exciting spottable week with regard to things. Excellent in a car park. There was a Porsche 944. It was a late 80s one. Had a body kit, and it had a Netherlands plate on it. And it was silver, and it was obviously used. It's obviously come from the Netherlands, so it had road grime from the autobahns and everything, and it was great. And I walked past it once, and then I made sure I walked past it again. And inside there was a gentleman, and I gave him a very large thumbs up. But he looked at me. I presume he may have been doing some sort of deal involving substances of some description.
Oh.
So I gave him a big thumbs up, and he just looked at me like, why are you doing that? He might have quite rightly thought, I'm in my 944. What's, you know, nobody pays attention to me in Holland, but there you go. I can only think he probably thought I was an overcover cop rather than an undercover one. But I wanted to show my appreciation that he was charging around in a body in an 80s body kitted 944.
Right.
So I won't see anything as good as that. I was out and about in the Baby Shark, which is a E21 BMW. You wouldn't think people would know that it was an E21. Within the space of 10 minutes and within two visits, I was stopped by young men, more than, you know, half my age, who came over to congratulate me on being out in quite a scruffy old car. And they both used the term E21. So it isn't just me and other BMW anoraks who use E numbers. That was them. They were quite fascinated by it all. And one of them were telling me all the cars he'd wish he'd kept, you know, like Rover 200 turbos and stuff like that. And it was very, very refreshing, because sometimes I do think, oh, it's an old fellow's game, this, what we're doing, Bangers and Classics, me and you, David, it's just me and you left. But actually, no, there is an undercurrent of youngsters coming through. So it was very, very nice to have a couple of conversations there. Also, driving around, absolutely immaculate Mark 1 Mondeo. Was on an end plate, had no other designation on it, didn't say what model it was in particular, so I would assume it probably is or was a very, very basic one. There were some fairly awful alloys on it, which I think might have been standard spec at the time. You could probably order them, but they weren't very good. It would have looked better on plastic wheel trims. But apart from that, it was just the fact that it was a Mark 1 Mondeo that wasn't rusty, didn't have gaffer tape over the bumpers, which obviously they all do, the very old ones. But it was just a very well looked after car, and it was nice to see that driving around. I'll stop there. But as I said to you during the week, David, I must give a shout out to Robert in New Zealand, who listens to this. He's doing things around his house when he listens to our podcast. I hope we don't put him off at all. But he very kindly bought a book from me, which he does occasionally when I bring them out. And he goes to the bother of getting a real one delivered. He could have a digital one, but no, he wants the real thing. So it's always a pleasure to send it to him, and he said he listens to and enjoys the podcast. So he's a glutton for punishment there. So it was very, very good.
Well, you know what? You know, I've got family in New Zealand, don't you, James?
Have you? Goodness me.
I have indeed. You know, it mentioned about this guy doing DIY. Mm-hmm. I want to say who one of my relatives was, but I'll give Robert a clue. He may know who I'm talking about. Mm. But he built his own house, which still stands, and he even cast the bricks for it. And so well did he build it that it survived an earthquake in 2010. The house is, I think it's in Kaipoi, if that's how you pronounce it. I may have to come back and redub that bit if I've got it wrong. greetings from the UK to the land of the long white cloud.
That's right.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, land of the All Blacks. We all know about them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they're quite good, aren't they, David?
Yeah, they tend to be not too bad. They're not too shabby at all. Mm. I did see them play Scotland once. It was the only time Scotland didn't lose to them, and it was a draw. 25 all, I think it was. I was a teenager. It was in 1983. And I was at Murrayfield, and what an atmosphere.
Mm.
I've never went to see Scotland play them again because I know what the result would be. I thought, that's as good as it's going to get. I'm not going back. But yes, absolutely. It's nice to know that people, shall we say, out with the UK do tune into the podcast. We're all about internationalism, you and me, in a sort of wide sense, aren't we? Mm.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Hands across the water.
We'll take money in any currency.
Yeah.
Anyway, going back.
Sorry. Yeah, go on. No, sorry, David. I was going to make a cryptocurrency joke, but I won't now. But if anyone wants to send us some cryptocurrency, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, got one. Just going back to the chap in the Porsche 944.
Yeah.
You thought he possibly thought you were a cop of some description. Is it the fake beard, do you reckon?
Yeah, probably, most likely, yeah.
And then
I think he just thought I was weird. He just thought he's one of those English weirdos. I just think that was all.
How could he possibly say that? Then you said something else about some guys talking about E21.
Yeah.
Now, perhaps they've seen you interacting, shall we say, with this guy in the Porsche, and perhaps E21 is some kind of substance. It's not a car we're talking about.
You could well be right. I don't know. I don't know what the young people take for recreation these days, but who knows? It could be a bit of E21.
My advice is stick to Lucozade.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all you need, Lucozade. If you can get hold of some of the old stuff, it cures everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
As we have said before in this podcast.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. Yes. That's the only reason we're here, is because we had Lucozade when we were younger.
That's it. Yep. So any news, James, you want to share or discuss?
I don't think so. I spoke to those chaps on the off the TV, Fuzz and Tim, who do Car SOS, which is probably one of the better of the Let's Restore Something shows, in that there's always a human angle to it. So, you know, quite often there's somebody who's not been very well and they can't restore their car, and they sneak in, steal it, and then restore it and deliver it back. So they've got a new series coming out. I think it's from the week that you hear this, ladies and gentlemen. You'll be able to, I think it would be tonight, actually. It will be on National Geographic, so you can watch it. And I think they're doing their 100th show. So they were quite good fun to talk to.
All right, so they're a bit ahead of us then, obviously. We were only in 54.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And they have to make a proper TV show.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, whereas we can't even make a half proper...
No, we can't even do a podcast, David.
No, we can't even do a podcast.
I mean, let's face it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Let's face it. We might as well just give up.
Mm.
Right, that's it. Right, anyway, so I think on that note, we'll take a break. You're listening to Bangers and Classics, the podcast where the cars are nearly as old as the presenters. And so we are back after the break, and it's time for this week's Banger or Classic. And we're going back in time to a car that first appeared in the UK in 1995, but appeared 7 years earlier, or at least the name appeared 7 years earlier on the continent. And it was current in the UK for two generations, in Europe for three, and that car is the Vauxhall Vectra. What's on the Vectra, Mr. Ruppert?
It's still a banger, isn't it, really, Vauxhall Vectra. You don't see, certainly the 1995 vintage ones are pretty much gone out of favour now, hasn't it? You see more of the recent ones, but it's a type of vehicle, you know, the rep special. But it was very, very good of its type. You still see them, but not very often. I think the only thing that was wrong with the cars, and listeners might be able to back us up on this, I think if you had to change the clutch, I think that was a bit of a to-do, apparently, which on a fleet car you would have thought should be quite an easy job, really. Well, it should be an easy job. But yeah, it was in its original form, it was a saloon and hatchback rival to the Mondeo, and it was just designed to thrash up and down the motorways quite comfortably. And that's what it did. Yeah. And so the thing about most of them, I mean, some were bought privately and used as family cars, but the majority of them were just bought by the car park load for fleets, really, weren't they?
Mm. Well, I mean, technically, you could say the Calibra was a coupe version of the Vectra, because although when the Calibra was launched, the Vectra as such didn't exist in the UK, it did exist in the continent. And if listeners are wondering, what I'm talking about is, I'm sure they often do, in the UK, with the Vauxhall Cavalier, which ran from the mid-70s, about 20 years, wasn't it, James? Went to the mid-90s?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And there were three different incarnations of it. The third incarnation came along in 1988. It was called the Cavalier in the UK, but in Europe, it was known as the Vectra. And that was the platform, I believe, that was used for the Calibra. So whereas we might say that the Calibra was a Cavalier in a party frock, it was really more of a Vectra in a party frock. But anyway, in the UK, obviously, we had the Cavalier till 95, and then it adopted the name Vectra that was used throughout Europe. And it never sold quite as well as the Cavalier. Cavalier at one time sold extraordinarily well in the UK. By the time the Vectra came along, it was diminishing returns. And the same was true of its main rival, the Mondeo. Quite a well-known Hollywood actor appeared in a series of UK TV ads for the Vectra in, I think, 2002, with the launch of the final generation Vectra. That chap was Ed Harris. Do you remember those ads?
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't think I realised that was Ed Harris. There you go.
The campaign was called, New Vectra, New Rules. And Ed Harris played an American lawyer who was, for some bizarre reason that was never explained, they were going to court to prove the Vectra was a new piece of automotive thinking. There were well enough short ads, well enough produced adverts. Just didn't result in the sort of sales that Vauxhall were hoping for. But you can see all those ads on Twitter. I think there were three. The first one where he appears and he's looking at the car and he's looking for the history of every nut and bolt, etc. And of course, I was a lawyer back then. I thought, nah, no, I can't stop laughing at this. Then there was a section in court where he was addressing a jury. Now, this is obviously an English jury because we don't tend to have juries in civil cases in Scotland, and you don't address a court and say what you're going to prove at the start. You just go on and prove the damn thing. You know, if there's an English, you'll say, we will prove that. Well, no, that's who cares? Just prove it. It's not about what you're going to do. It's about what you actually do. Anyway, I digress. And there was a third advert, which obviously dealt with the verdict and the conclusion from it. And that's to say, apart from the fact that I found it entertaining as a lawyer, they were actually pretty well shot ads. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to have a good screenwriter, etc. And so it proved. And of course, I was a lawyer back then. I thought, nah, no, I can't stop laughing at this. But then there was a section in court where he was addressing a jury. Now, this is obviously an English jury because we don't tend to have juries in civil cases in Scotland, and you don't address a court and say what you're going to prove at the start. You just go on and prove the damn thing. You know, if there's an English, you'll say, we will prove that. Well, no, that's who cares? Just prove it. It's not about what you're going to do. It's about what you actually do. Anyway, I digress. And there was a third advert, which obviously dealt with the verdict and the conclusion from it. And that's to say, apart from the fact that I found it entertaining as a lawyer, they were actually pretty well shot ads. Vectra, James, I would describe it as a worthy car. It wasn't perhaps the most glamorous thing in four wheels. They built a lot of them, if you go back and include the Cavalier range, because that's all it really was. It was just, you know, development, an evolution of the Cavalier. And they did a lot of valuable jobs, as you say, sales reps. I mean, they were the classic reps cars. But a lot of families had them as well. They were good enough cars, so well enough built, reliable enough. They were reasonably priced, and they did what it said in the tin. So you can't really argue against that.
No, I mean, certainly the later ones were not half bad. The ones from 2003 onwards, they were fairly posh inside. And you could get a V6 with them as well. And oddly enough, I was searching through material and I actually wrote something for the official Vauxhall magazine where I drove around the city of London in an estate and they took fancy pictures and everything. And obviously you had to say how sophisticated and lovely it was. But actually it was okay. It was really actually a very comfortable, which is obviously designed to be, sort of fuss-free car. You know, it was... If you couldn't see the badge, you probably would think you were in something an awful lot better than a Vauxhall. But in many ways, that was its downfall, in that people would rather have a Mercedes badge, an Audi badge, a BMW badge. And that's what really killed these cars off, unfortunately.
Badge snobbery, yeah. I'm going to go for classic simply because cars like this, they perform lots of unglamorous tasks. They get precious little reward, often don't get very well treated by their drivers. So I'm just going to go, just out of solidarity with them, classic.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll stick with Banger because, yeah, if you could get a nice late 90s, early 2000s car, maybe it'll become a classic one day, but it's still a banger. It'll still do a job. And it's an unusual sight, but it doesn't make my classic heart beat any faster.
Well, there we have it. Anyway, we shall move on from the Vectra. And the next thing we're going to do in the podcast is this week's challenge to find a three-wheel car of any make or type. Doesn't matter what it is. For under £10,000, and the rarer the better. And I should have said it had to be designed to have three wheels, not one that's been left in three wheels by a careless driver or some thieves. So I'll tell you what I found, James, because I'm quite proud of this one. I have always liked Bond bugs. Obviously, really made by Reliant, designed by Tom Karen. Tom has been mentioned a few times in this podcast for the things that he created. Now, you might think, well, the Bond bug isn't actually, you know, it's not that rare as three-wheel cars go. I think there were about 2,500 of them built with. But this one is quite rare. Because what colour do you usually find a Bond bug in, James?
Well, they're orange, I think, David, aren't they?
Well, how about a white one?
Factory white, is that?
It's a factory white one. This was a promotional one. There were six of them built in white to be used for promotional purposes by a certain company. Three of them, I believe, still exist.
Was it actually used by a fag packet company?
It was. It's said to be in nice condition. It was given a body off restoration a little bit more than 10 years ago. It's got a 700cc engine, so it's obviously the earlier version. Bond bug was upgraded to a 750cc engine later on. It says it's never been welded. It's got its original interior. There aren't many photographs, but the interior does look pretty good. I've seen Bond bugs go for a lot of money in recent times. A lot of money. This one could be yours for £8,995. And that is an extraordinarily rare Bond bug. As I say, it's a factory white one that was used for promotional purposes.
Yeah, no, I quite like that. Yeah, that sounds very, very good.
Anyway, what did you find? That's what I'm desperate to know.
Are you desperate to know?
Desperate to know.
Well, I've actually chosen a Bond as well, David. This is a 1962 Bond mini car. It's a van one. You used to see these about, I used to see these about till relatively recently, you know, people using them because they were obviously cheap. And when they didn't want to ride their motorcycle in the winter, they got out their Bond. This is a van one. I'm sure when you started to say Bond, I thought, oh, we'd pick the same car. But again, this is a very good value buy. Again, it's £4,750. It looks to be in fairly immaculate condition. It's got probably a fairly terrible engine, which would drive you mad after a while. It's obviously a two-stroke, so people will hear you coming from several hundred miles away. But as they say in the advert, well, top speed is given at 55 miles an hour. I think you'd be the bravest person in the world if you were going to go at 55 miles an hour in this. But the average fuel consumption is 60 miles to the gallon. So it's a very car that we need right now to extend those very expensive gallons of fuel. And I quite like it. It was repainted in blue in 2008. So I have to research and see what the original colour was, whether they have stuck to the original colour or painted it something different. There's space on the back there to put our Bangers and Classics logo because it's got van rear windows, which are blanked in. So we could do that. But I just thought it was a bit different and tick the boxes. But I do like your Bond bug and I do think we should go and get that after the show's over.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Right, well, we'll take a break. This is Bangers and Classics, the motoring podcast where memory lane is full of potholes. So welcome back. And for the last part of the podcast, we're going to move from three wheels to three seats. We're going to talk about the Matra three-seat sports cars. That would be the Bagheera and the Mirena. Do you remember those, James?
I do remember them, but I don't know as much about them as you do, David, because you're basically the resident expert on those. So you may even be the national expert on them because you've owned a few and you know what they're about.
Oh, no, a lot of people know more about them than me, I'll tell you.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They'd be quick to tell you that as well. Right. Yeah, which is fair enough. I don't object. Yeah. The Bagheera was launched in 1973. Three seats across the middle, Obviously, it's a mid-engine coupe, rear-wheel drive. The interior looked as if it had been designed by some anarchic NASA designers on a weekend off. It was really quite funky. It used a Simca engine. It was a 1294cc Poissy engine. Originally, I think it produced about 84 horsepower or something like that. So it wasn't a ball of fire. Pretty economical, though. But Matra pulled a really clever trick. They launched it at the Le Mans 24 Hour. And the reason it's clever is because one of the other cars, the Matra 670, which I think was 670B, I think it was, won Le Mans that year. It won it 3 years in the trot, 72 to 74. I think 50 Bagheeras went around the track before the race or after the race. And obviously, they were all painted in yellow. But the blue-painted racing car won the event outright, which I believe was the 50th anniversary of Le Mans as well. Matra produced it until 1980. There were two different series that was restyled, and a new one came out, I think, late 1976. I used to prefer the later version, which I had one, but in recent years I've decided I kind of like the original better. It was eventually upgraded to a 1442cc engine, and here's something it did. Apart from having three seats, it was also an early example of a designer car, because in the range for several years, you could buy a version which had been breathed on by André Courage, who you may recall, James, I'm sure you'll know that, you will know this, in fact, was one of the people credited with inventing the miniskirt.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the Courage was all in white. It had a sort of tan interior, and you had, amongst other things, detachable handbags on each door. So there you go.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it was a series model. They introduced it for the first series Bagheera, and I think the first year of the second series they retained it and then dropped it. There was also a Courage Matra Rancho, which was all in white with brown fake wooden trim and various accoutrements on it. But they only made one of those. It didn't take. Anyway, Bagheera suffered from fairly substantial chassis rust problems. Many cars of the 70s did, and that was really was its undoing. There was another version I should mention, which was the M560, which would have been an 8-cylinder Bagheera. It was a modified version. It obviously looked a little bit different, a little bit wider. And the power plant for it wasn't a new engine. They basically created a 2.6-litre V8 engine by joining two 1300 Simca engines side by side in a U configuration. So it was called the U8. And I think a handful of these were built and run. At least one of them still exists. Unfortunately, the energy crisis that came in sort of 73, 74 killed the idea. But from then on, we come to 1980, and Bagheera goes out and they bring in a new Matra called the Murena. It, two or three seats, a coupe, used bigger engines. Its main feature, really, was it was the first mass-produced car to have a hot-dip galvanized chassis. Matra had learned from the rust problems experienced by the Bagheera and had taken steps to eradicate them by dipping the chassis into a bath of zinc at something around 420 to 460 degrees Celsius, and it was very effective. The engines in it were the 1600, which was the biggest version of the original Poissy engine, and there was a 2.2-litre version, effectively a stretched version of the Chrysler 2-litre engine, and there were a couple of versions of it. Originally, it came out fairly underpowered, only about 113 horsepower, and then Matra breathed on it and produced one that was 134 horsepower. They called it 142. I think that's because somebody miscalculated, but there you go. And there would have been another version called the 4S, which was a fantastic car, or it would have been, slightly restyled body, but with a 2.2-litre engine, completely revamped by Matra, double overhead camshaft, 16 valves, fuel injection. In 1981, it produced about 176 horsepower, so around about the same as the Lotus Esprit 2.2. This would have been an absolute flying machine. Peugeot owned a minority share in Matra Automobile, but since Peugeot supplied the mechanics, Matra was dependent on them agreeing to homologate the engine for use, the 4S engine, and Peugeot was facing financial challenges on various fronts, as many people were in the early 80s with the recession. It never happened. So it only had a fairly short life, the Murena. It was 3 years out of production in 1983 when Matra decided to produce the Espace instead. There were considerably fewer Murenas produced than the Bagheera, 10,680 to something like 47,900. but very interesting cars. If you can find one, they're good to drive. If it's a Bagheera, make sure it's been restored and check for chassis rot, because it is pretty horrendous on them. Mirena, just again, all the checks you do in a classic car, just doing it. But lovely cars to drive, very comfortable, very French, very enjoyable.
Great. Okay. Where can I buy one?
In the UK, very hard nowadays.
Yeah.
There used to be about 250 Mirenas, I think, here. No one actually knows the exact number, but I'd be surprised there's only about 25 left. Some of them would have been written off, and a lot of them went back across the pond because they were all left-hand drive. There were some right-hand drive Bagheeras made. They were not a factory conversion. They were done by a company called Hodec, who were based in Woking, and it wasn't the best conversion in the world. But there we go. So, yeah, I think you should go and buy one anyway, James.
Okay. All right, then. Okay, so we're going to get a bomb bug and one of those, and we'll be fine.
Well, the great thing about one of those is you can get two Hammer horror actresses in the car with you.
All right. Yeah. There's lots of advantages.
Exactly, that's your main advantage. There's also a reasonable amount of luggage space, so you can even probably get the luggage in it as well.
Fantastic.
Now, in fact, if you get one of those, next time you go to Transylvania, I could come with you when you check the XJS. I had to blooming cycle across, I recall.
Well, but you did very well. It was a very good team building experience.
Well, it certainly built something, that's for sure. Whatever happened to that dishwasher, by the way?
Well, there you go. We'll never know.
Yeah, so I suspect we may find out someday.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's enough for this week. I think we've covered everything that's on the agenda. Anything else you want to add, James?
No, that's all. I mean, I think the only thing we can briefly talk about is the three-seat layout, which isn't just the Mirena and the McLaren or a transit van for that reason. But there were also a couple of other vehicles, and there's the rather wonderful Fiat Multipla, which came out in 2000, which was quite a good way of getting around. It sort of solved the problem of as soon as you got more than five bodies on board, you had to get rid of your luggage space. And with a Multipla, you didn't. It was okay. You still had a big boot because you were sitting three abreast, front and rear. So it was very clever. Lots of people had a go about its looks, but actually it's a fantastic looking vehicle. And if you look at prices now, they're actually quite stiff now. I think people have cottoned on to the fact that we will never see their like again. And I was looking at some the other day, a really early one. And again, there's not that many around, but it was nearly £2,000 for a 1.6. It was a decent spec ELX, but I think people are reckoning that's not a bad vehicle to buy. The other alternative to that would be the Honda FRV, which was obviously built to Honda standards. There's a fair amount of those about, actually. You can there's quite a lot for sale, but sort of a bit different and not as quirky as the Fiat. Maybe that would be better for our nationwide tour to get a Multipla.
A friend of mine had an FRV from new.
Oh, really?
And he kept it for 16 years. And eventually it was Tinworm that got it.
Mm.
The mechanics were fine.
Yeah.
But it was being badly nibbled by the old Tinworm.
Yeah.
There was one other three seat car I can think of. Was it the Ferrari 365P back from the 60s?
Could be, I don't know.
I think, I'm not sure they ever made more than one of those. It was white. Right. It was a three-seater, absolutely gorgeous-looking car.
Mm.
Do check that out, because it's well worth seeing. Not a car you'll ever see on the road, or probably at a car show, but you can at least look at the picture of it and marvel at just the beauty of the styling. You'd be marveling at the beauty of the Hammer horror actresses, knowing you, James, of course.
Well, I don't know about that, but a man needs a hobby, David. And there you go, that's one I've chosen.
Indeed. Well, how can I knock it? I think on that note, I'll just simply say thank you very much for listening and hope you tune in next time.
Yeah, it was a very good Bond-themed edition, but there was no special agent involved. It was merely about the cars, as it should be on Bangers and Classics.
So, but you are a special agent, James.
I don't know. I'm special in lots of ways, but I'm not a special agent.
Well, we special K last week, so this is obviously
well, it was, wasn't this it? Week. Yeah, that was a good episode. But yeah, just a reminder that there's, I don't know, is there 55 episodes to listen to now? So yeah, if you want to catch up, there's a lot of nonsense to catch up.
Absolutely.
Which will make sense of some of the jokes that you don't get.
Absolutely.
Because they're not really jokes, are they, really? They're just in-jokes between you and me, David. But there you go.
I'm not in them either, that's the problem.
Oh, you're not in them.
No. Anyway, cheerio, folks.
All right, yeah, cheerio. Thank you for turning up.